Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Claire.
And our greatest loss has been not being able to have children.
So we're grieving the loss of something we never actually had in the first place. Hello, and welcome to the Sign Up Why podcast. This is episode 3, part 2.
Part 2, because part 1...
Too long. Episode 3, part 1 and 2 are a little different because for the full 2 episodes, you just got us.
And they explain where our mission to find 101 types of loss all started, with our own experience of loss.
So if you haven't heard part 1, we recommend going back to your podcast app and selecting the first part of episode 3 and hearing our personal journey through childlessness and infertility.
But hey, you're your own person. You could also be a rebel and hear this one first.
In this episode, we're answering anonymously submitted questions by friends and people we know, and we asked them what they'd like to ask us specifically and what they're curious about or what they'd like to ask any couple going through infertility or childlessness. And by making it anonymous, we allowed them to be as honest and as brutal as they wanted.
Let's do this. Part 2. Questions.
Okay, so the first one is, do you think it would have been easier to process if you knew earlier on that you couldn't have children?
No. Next question. There'll always be challenges, I think. It will always be difficult to process it, whatever stage of life you're at.
Yeah, I don't know if it would have been easier, but it would have been very different. If I'd have known I couldn't have children before I got married, for example, I would have known I was going into a marriage that would never have natural children via me. So that would have been a slightly different process, but I would have had to have gone through it again as you meet people, I suppose, and that would be very different because you'd have to be telling other people, they'd have to be coming to terms with it, you wouldn't be on the same page necessarily. At least we found out at the same time. So that how would you have felt if you'd have known before you got married you couldn't have children?
Yeah, that would have been really interesting because we didn't have that sort of dating process, did we, where it's like 6 dates in and then you raised the serious issue that you've been hiding up until that point. We didn't experience anything like that. So I think knowing you as I do now, I would have no belief that you'd have reacted badly if I'd said to you sort of before we got engaged, hey, something I want to share with you, I'm infertile. I don't think, knowing you as I know you now, you would have reacted in any way other than, all right, what does that mean?
Yeah, I think I always saw things we went through as challenges together. There were always things like, oh, okay, this is what we need to get over next, but it was always we. I never felt like I was dealing with it or you were dealing with it. It was always together, and I think it would have been the same for us. I think for other people, maybe very different, but for us and the type of people we are, I think it would have been a different process. I don't know if it would have been easier, but it would have been different. Okay, so the next one is, how long did it take before you accepted that you wouldn't have the family you expected?
For me, I don't think I have fully accepted that I'm not going to have the family that I thought I once had. So, yeah, 11 years and still heading towards that point.
Yeah, I think I would say the same. I don't know if I have. I remember even now when people talk about pregnancies and getting pregnant, I sort of am thinking, oh, that might not be me. And then I check myself and think, hang on, that will never be me. I literally can't do that now. And that still hasn't, I don't think, has fully sunk in. And that's 2 years after the surgery.
I don't think we'll ever come to terms with it because it will always be something that's broken. And can you ever come to terms with something that's broken? I don't know.
So the next one was, how does the loss of what you hoped for compare to the loss of something or someone you had?
Do you have an answer to that one?
I think it's very different. It's very difficult because you don't have that point where you come to terms with it. I think when you lose something you actually had, there's a definitive moment when you lose it, generally. And the same with, you know, someone dies. When it's something that you just hoped for and you never had, there's no definitive point. So we never had a negative pregnancy test. We didn't even get that far. We never had a miscarriage. We had nothing that brought us face to face with our grief of what we lost. So the danger there is that you never grieve it. You never get to that point of realising. And even when we drew our line in the sand, I remember very recently coming to this like suddenly moment of epiphany where I sort of thought, well, hang on, I thought the line in the sand was the end. That was the end point of reaching this. This is what we... But actually, it was the beginning of the loss. It was the beginning of the grieving, because that was the moment we knew it would never happen. We were assuming it wouldn't. So that sort of was confusing in itself. So I think confusion is the word I would say. It's confusing because it goes on forever and you don't know when to grieve it and how hard to grieve it.
Confusion is the word that I would have used. Certainly it makes it more confusing. But I liken it to almost like a sport. If you're training for a 100-meter final in the Olympics, and in all the years you're training for that, you have a dream of running and winning that race, or running at least getting a medal. So being taken out of the equation way before the actual Olympics, there would be a sadness there and there would be a pain, but it would be a very different sort of pain to if you'd actually run and lost, or run and came fourth. It would be a different type of pain. So it's more confusing. I think not having been to the depths of grief with a physical loss of something.
I wonder if it would be healthier for these kinds of losses if you actually did have something, you know, you had a almost like a grave or a monument or something that was like, these are the kids that we never had. They're right here. And we're not going to have them. And we need to grieve the fact that these two, three little people that look like us and had names and had characters and personalities that were jointly ours, they're not going to be here. They never got a chance. What would that look like?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think if there's a physical something to look at, it's a reminder to others of the trauma that you've been through. And with our journey, as maybe with others, there isn't that physical reminder for others. So you just get on with life and people see you happy and see you in good moods and they assume that all is well because there isn't that physical reminder. So where there's no grave or there's no scar, it can be very easily assumed that all is well and you've moved on.
And I think the fact that this situation makes a lot of people feel quite uncomfortable when you mention childlessness, it pushes you more and more into trying to be normal around other people because they don't know how to deal with you being sad or being affected by things anyway. So it's not a natural thing to be like that around people. So you do just try and be normal, which, like you said, gives the impression you're absolutely fine. Next one. How do you feel or cope when people close to you continue to have babies and you have to travel the journey alongside them and after birth? This is tricky because these people will be listening. I think for me, it's probably more of a journey than you in some ways, because I feel like the women's lives are naturally taken up with babies more than the men when it comes to social commitments, not in life, but... meeting up with people, generally, they get points when the guys can go out or you can meet a guy on his own. But whenever I meet the girls, it tends to mean the baby has to come, or they can't come out in the evening, so you have to go to them because they might be breastfeeding or they're, you know, early days with babysitting and things. So I think I probably go through that a little bit more than you. That sounds true.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think it's something you have to deal with more frequently than I do.
I'm not like a jealous person, so I never look at someone having a baby and feel jealousy. And it's not a knife through the heart when someone tells me they're expecting a baby. It's harder when people who have been trying for a long time haven't been able to have them and you think they're going to be in your boat and then they're not, just because it takes them out of your boat and you lose friends that were kind of in a similar life stage to you. So that's confusing because you're happy for them, but at the same time you lose out. So I think it's one of those things that will always be difficult. The hardest thing I found is that I didn't know when other people had babies how much it was going to impact my life. I thought I would be watching them, and the hardest part might be that they have children and I don't. And that was completely not the situation. That bit wasn't that difficult. It was more that suddenly I lost the friendship and I lost the relationship with them that I'd had. And that wasn't because they stepped back or anything bad happened or there's any choices there. It's just because that's what family life looks like. Your friends can't come over to yours for dinner anymore. You know, you can't have your house as the place where people meet. You have to go to other people's. Your house isn't built for 2, 3, 4-year-olds. So when people come over, no matter how much you try and make them feel comfortable, I always feel like they're awkward. Or they're apologising all the time, which makes you just feel bad because you haven't really... got an environment they feel happy in, or they feel like, oh, I mustn't touch that because this and that. And no matter how much I say, it doesn't matter, I don't know. They still don't fully relax in it. And so your house is no longer somewhere that people would come and enjoy. And I think it's things like that that shifted that I just didn't expect.
So the question was, how do you feel or cope with that?
Well, you kind of, I mean, you have to suck it up, because if you want the friendship, you take your friends with their families and how they come. So I do know people who have separated off from people who have children because they just can't cope with it if they haven't got kids. We were never those kind of people. We never wanted to be those kind of people. So I think we've tried to work hard to stay alongside our friends, go to them as much as we can, and just recognise that the sadnesses we have around doing that, it's not their problem. So just trying to cope with it in our own space and internally, and just maybe grieving that. But it's not something you can put on people, because people in those stages of life don't also have the capacity to take on a lot of your rubbish and a lot of your issues. They're tired, you know, they're frustrated when they get free time. They want to enjoy adult time. And I love that we can bring that to them, and they can love coming to our house when they don't have kids, because it's quiet and, you know, people comment on that. It's so peaceful. And that's nice. I love that we can give them that. And I think that's more important than them carrying our burdens and how we're feeling. So I think it's a case of just sucking it up, really. And suck it up doesn't sound like a very healthy coping strategy.
Well, no, because if you suck it up, you've got to, you know, there's got to be an exhaust, hasn't there? You've got to blow it out somewhere. Being aware, recognising, acknowledging these feelings, these times, you know, knowing that it can be different one week to the next. I think there are things that others can do for us that make us feel included, or feel like, you know, there are people close to us that get it, or that try to get it. I think we fully appreciate that no one can really get this. It's weird. Even we don't get it. So we can't expect others to be able to understand it. But there are times, you know, like that time of year, Mothering Sunday, just days like that, where if someone, you know, all it takes is one person just to recognise, just to reach out to you with a message. Sometimes we've had like a gift of flowers, being like, yeah, that's really lovely. Because we're not sad, but it just shows that somebody's thinking of you.
Yeah, I think
that makes such a difference.
That is the thing. So we're not sat there feeling sad about it necessarily, but just knowing that someone's thought about you. You know, there's so many situations we would think about other people, and we would get in touch with people who have got children, like, hope this has gone well, hope that's going well, or the kids' birthdays and things like that. You make a lot of effort, and then for there not to be a single day where it's returned, I think can be a little bit tricky. So, you know, I mean, sometimes, I mean, I think one of the Mother's Day recently, I had one message from a friend that I don't even keep in contact with that much, just saying, thinking of you. That meant the world, because it was such a sweet little moment of, I'm having this, you know, this day when I'm being celebrated because I've got a bunch of kids, but actually I'm thinking about you as well. And that's really key. And I make a point of trying to message as many people as I know. And I think another way that we have coped with these things is having friends that are in a similar boat. When we get together with them and we can just let off steam and we can share our frustrations, and we all talk about families and friends and places where you know, you feel a bit out of it and you feel a bit sad and these things happen and you can't be part of it, and just like almost joking about it in a way that you can't do anywhere else because you just all get it. That for me, I think, is a really nice place to just let off steam as well, because it just reminds you you're not alone, and that is so important. I think that's what I want this podcast to do. I want people to know, whatever loss you're going through, wherever you are, you're not alone. There's so many other people going through it, and there's so much power in knowing it's not just you. And the minute you put it all in on yourself, that's so destructive. Okay, so how did you arrive at the final decision to not only stop trying to get pregnant, but also not try alternative methods of having or adopting a child? So I would say that the final decision was when we drew a line in the sand, that we were not going to try for anything via IVF or any medical intervention. We were just going to be the two of us. The trying to get pregnant thing, the thing is, you do try and get pregnant, I think, probably in the early days. But when you've been doing this for 10 years, your normal life is just no contraceptive and see what happens. So it's not like you're trying to get pregnant anymore. You're just living life and hoping it happens one day. So it's that sort of thing never really stops. But equally, it's not like most people have a time period of 3-4 months or maybe a year, or if they're unlucky, 2 years of trying to get pregnant, where you're monitoring everything. And we never really had that, it was just over such a long period of time. So yes, officially when I had the hysterectomy, obviously pregnancy became completely impossible. The adopting thing, I guess, like you said earlier, it's still on the table.
It's not a desire we currently have, either of us, but we ask each other probably once every 6 months or so, just to check in if that desire has changed. Coming to that final decision, for me, I think you lose two things. One maybe is a good thing to lose. One is a sad thing to lose. But that's the sort of the weightiness of it. And you lose the wonder. Because the weightiness of it is just the years that we spent not knowing and discussing. And it really takes its toll when you spend just every family occasion and gathering and festival and every bit of small talk and every time you meet someone new and you have the same conversations about what's changed, what's new, every New Year's Eve where you contemplate a new year and you're just thinking, I don't know. And we got so fed up of answering questions with I don't know. And so losing that weightiness was a relief. And was definitely something that drove us towards drawing that line in the sand and saying enough. We move forward now as the two of us and we leave that waiting and the weightiness behind. But then you lose the wonder as well, which is quite sad because, you know, it's nice to wonder. It's nice to have vision and dreams and ambitions. And when you wonder, you know, the what if, was that the time? Could this be the signs, the symptoms of a pregnancy? You wonder, will it happen this month, this year? When you draw an end to it, there's sort of a sadness there that you're, okay, recognizing that all those potential hopes and ambitions and dreams are not going to come to anything. And that's a choice that we're making, that we're shutting them down and sort of putting them in a box and leaving it. That's the sadness. So the weightiness we were relieved to lose. The wonder is a sadness to lose.
What would you say to someone going through the trials of trying for a child? Don't let it consume you. All too often people let things like this consume their whole life. It dictates their conversations, it dictates their sex life, it dictates their relationships, it dictates their conversations with friends, their approach to other people's children, to being around pregnant women, to babies, to doctor's appointments. If you let it consume you, then I think it will drag your whole life up and down, and it is a roller coaster. If you can keep it so that you still enjoy your relationship and you can enjoy sex without it being something that you're just monitoring for ovulation times and, you know, you're getting angry with your spouse because either of your hormones are going up and down because you're on treatments or because you have to have injections, you know, all these things, I'd say just don't let it consume your life. Let it be something that is in a portion of your life, and it will be a big portion of your life, and it will dominate a lot of your thoughts. But try and keep some space for other stuff and try and keep normal friendships and relationships going during it because you're going to need them.
Absolutely. And what you said at the very start there, I'd almost emphasise even further and say you must not let it consume you. You must not let it consume you. I think I'd add into that because I completely agree that would be certainly one of my priorities. But I think part of that is forcing choices. You've got to bring yourself to a point of making choices and then sticking to them. And that's quite hard to do because sometimes you want to just carry on and just let stuff be in the background. But you need to be able to make choices as to whether you go one way or another.
We know some people that have, if they've got endless IVF cycles, let's say they can afford to just keep going as long as they want to. We've got friends we know who have put a set amount on it. So that we will do 3 rounds of IVF. Or we will only do what the NHS provides. So whether it's 1, 2, or 3, we'll only do that. Or we'll do everything the NHS gives us and we'll only pay for one cycle. I think that's really healthy to do that and stick to it. Because if not, you will go on forever. And what will dictate you not having a family will be something biological like the menopause or, you know, something else. And that's not a healthy way to have it dictated to you. Ideally, you want to be in control of it. And I would, you know, say as the woman, don't just assume that you're the only one in it and that the whole thing evolves around you because your partner will be going through a different set of emotions but still going through the same sort of roller coaster. So try and have empathy for the other side and try and remember that you're on the journey together. If you manage to break the relationship through trying for children, which is not uncommon, then it does get worse.
And a question we've asked fairly regularly, like once a year, let's say, is, are we enough? Are you enough for me? Am I enough for you without having children? And if there's any doubt in that, why and how do we fix that?
Mm.
Because we want to make sure that we are enough for each other for the rest of our lives. If it's the two of us, if it stays like this, are we enough for each other? And if there's any doubt there, fix it.
And remind yourself why you're together in the first place. If you go back pre-trying for children, you'd have all the reasons you need as to why you're together. And you need to focus on those and remember those as well, not just look at your current situation, but look at what brought you together in the first place. So next one, are there any surprising, unforeseen triggers for your grief, aside from the seemingly obvious things like pregnancy announcements?
Yeah, I think a fairly obvious trigger for me would be seeing children reach out for a parent, seeing a small child reaching to be picked up by a dad or to want to climb into dad's lap. You know, the amount of times I've been in a room with parents and, you know, we're all watching the children and little child wants to climb into dad's lap or be with dad or play with dad in the garden, whatever it may be. I think they're moments for me that are sort of quite take me by surprise. That's where I think, oh, I'm never going to have that.
Yeah. And I think some people think it's the pregnancy announcements. And actually, they're not so bad, really. The only thing that makes me sad about pregnancy announcements is I know that my friendship with that person is going to shift because I know I've been through this too many times now to know that it can't stay the same. So I think that's the only thing with those. Whereas, like you said, the moments where you see parents with their children, those connections at any age, even when they're teenagers, they're the hardest bits to watch. And sometimes you'll watch a parent with their child being very loving and very connected and you're having to sit there watching it. You might be the only other person in the room. And that can be one of the most painful things. And yet people don't seem to realise that. They carry on as normal. Whereas the pregnancy announcement, they take so much care and time over. And I kind of want to be like, that's not the hard bit. The hard bit's to come when, like, 5 years down the line, you're connecting with your child in a way that I will never have.
Christmas is a time I find difficult as well. I think as a child growing up, I loved Christmas. Presents and great food and partying and gatherings. And now being, 42 years old and having for the last 5 or so years experienced Christmases where I've really missed just that childish excitement of Christmas. And I see the guys around me all get really excited about Christmas because they're doing it for their children. And that makes me sad because I miss enjoying Christmas and find it all just goes past now. It's just a few more days. And it's like, I really want to be excited about Christmas.
How do you find ways to fill the gaps left by childlessness? For example, the extra celebrations of birthdays, mothers and father's days.
Filling the gaps.
Starting podcasts is a great way to fill a gap.
Yeah, I don't think we ever have really filled the gaps. Not intentionally.
No.
Because I think we recognise the dangers of sort of filling the gap by, you know, polyfillering, where you leave stuff, emotion underneath.
Well, I think, like they've said here, for example, the extra celebrations of birthdays and stuff. So obviously we have a lot less of those in our life.
We know the gaps are there. We recognise there will always be gaps. And I think we live with them. But I certainly don't think we try and fill them.
We don't fill them, we feel them.
Ooh, it's one for a T-shirt, isn't it?
Okay, in what practical ways can friends and family best support you in your childlessness and make the loss easier to bear? This is difficult.
It is. It can be the smallest thing that just lets someone know that you're being thought about.
And yet we don't want people constantly asking about us and making it extra kind of allowances for us in any way. I think the best ways I've felt supported is when people ask, just ask about it. How are you doing? Is that hard for you? Quite often people said, is this hard for you? Like if we're at an event or we have to do something. And I've actually been like, no, not really. No, I feel good. But it means so much that that was asked. So I think checking in, just being there, you know, the kind of person I know that I can just message and say, oh, today's hard for this reason. Or I can't do this because of this reason. Or so-and-so just asked me for this or assumed this and it really hurts, but I've got to pretend I'm fine. I think having friends around that you can just verbalise that to every now and then, that's really lovely. And I think just being aware that you know, let us do our journey. Don't fill it with what you think we should be doing or filling in. You know, it's not helpful. If you're a family listening and you've got kids that can't have children and you're like, oh, I don't know what to do, or friends, just allowing them to do the journey their way, keeping them accountable if they're getting really depressing to be around. But other than that, just being guided by them and just ask them. You know, if they don't want to be asked, they'll soon tell you, but just ask. I think that's what most people would say in any situation they're going through that's hard. Just ask me.
I think I'd add to that about managing expectations, which is really hard to do without the benefit of hindsight. But in relationships and friendships, to be able to manage expectations of how this relationship might change or evolve or pause for a spell, whether it's 6 months, 12 months, 5 years, as I say, really hard to do without knowing. And I think we've not found our expectations have been massively different, but at times I think we've expected more. We've expected things that haven't worked out that way, and that mostly is probably because we have assumed stuff, or because things have been said that we believed about how things will be, how things will be from this point on.
I would say a good way to support people is not to promise stuff that you can't deliver. So over the years, for some stuff, I've really clung to that and thought, this is what our relationship with these people and their child is going to be. This is going to be, you know, this is going to help us. This is going to be good. We'll have kids in our life and we get on really well with them. The reality is that doesn't often happen because family life just gets in the way and babies aren't that easy to share out. So don't overpromise, because although you might not remember even saying it and you might not be your reality, it might be something that someone who can't have a child is clinging on to as a possible connection. Be realistic with that. Okay, how do you deal with the insensitive questions graciously?
It's a tricky one. Depends what mood you're in.
It does, yeah. And the older I get, the less gracious I am if I'm feeling like it was just a stupid question.
Well, what sort of questions can be insensitive? Because I think a common question is, you know, do you have children? That's not insensitive. That's just an inquiry. So I can handle that fine.
Yeah.
I think other questions you may get asked, like, have you considered adoption? I find that quite hard to deal with, because I want to say, you know, for 11 years I considered nothing but adoption and fostering and sperm donation and IVF and ICSI and embryo adoption and whatever else. So of course I've considered adoption. What a stupid question to ask.
A better way of answering it is actually just to be like, yeah, we have. Have you considered adoption? We read a great blog article once from a woman who couldn't have children who was so fed up of being asked. She did actually turn it around to other people and say, well, actually, have you considered it? Because it's not just people without children that consider adoption. So that one's actually quite, depending on how I'm feeling, it's quite a nice one to turn around. And they very quickly run from it, which is fascinating considering they were the one that mentioned it as a subject. I think we more likely get comments that are probably a bit more insensitive. I've had people say things like, you know, you must save a fortune on contraceptive, or at least you can go on holiday. Wish I could give my kids away. Peaceful and quiet, your house must be all the time.
Wish my house was this clean.
Yeah, stuff like that I think can be a little bit insensitive.
Yeah, so how do you deal with those remarks when they're said?
Well, I do deal graciously with them, because they're not meant in a nasty way. And a lot of the time it's just uncomfortableness, or it's just they're kind of not knowing how to deal with it. So they come out with something in a nervous way, which is more often than not where they come from. It depends. If the person is a bit careless with their words, then sometimes I'll be a bit sarcastic in response. But on the whole, you know, early on I would just laugh and just go along with it and not make a scene. Now I think if people assume too much, I don't like it when people just assume we didn't want them from the start. Or, you know, we never wanted them, so it was all right for you anyway. Or you never seemed like you wanted them, so it wasn't that difficult for you. I think a lot of people assume that when you try and get on with life and act normally. That annoys me, because I just think, you haven't asked about my journey, but you've made a massive assumption about it. I think where I can, try and educate people, because I don't want them to keep making the same mistake with others. I'm on groups with people without children. They all want people to understand and to learn. So there's a lot of blogs out there where you can read what's the best way to deal with the situation, to chat to people without children. So try and point them in the direction of some of that stuff, if that's helpful as well. And just keep doing things like this. The more people you can educate about the situation from behind closed doors, the more when they go out and about and chat to people, they'll be a bit more sensitive.
A follow-up question to that, which has been asked by a friend or family member, is you know, what alternatives are there to those questions? What are the better alternatives to those questions?
I mean, there is no alternative, I don't think, to do you have children? It's often a follow-on from asking if you're married, which I'd imagine a lot of single people struggle with.
By asking the question, is that by choice? Is that a good question to ask?
I think, yeah. What I would do is find a way of phrasing it. Yeah, allows people to answer in their own way. So I had to find a comfortable answer to that question. I had to find an answer. I tended to say, no, that didn't happen for us. Or that wasn't possible for us, which felt a bit softer for them. And you need to do the same thing, I think. Find a response where if people say no, rather than just leaving them there with that no, which is quite uncomfortable, find a follow-up, either a question or a comment, like you said, was that by choice? It's a nice thing to ask, but then, you know, there'll always be someone that's upset by questions. And I think you've got to question why they're asking as well. I mean, sometimes you just don't need to ask. Do you need to know if this person has children?
But I think what you're saying is, you know, consider the question that, you know, don't ask questions for the sake of it. But if you really care and you're really interested and you're invested in the conversation, then ask the questions. But don't just ask them to make small talk.
They seem to be the go-to questions. Are you married? Do you have children? And then follow up with what is your job?
What's your job?
Yeah. And that shouldn't be what we're all defined by, really. So I think find some kinder words. What do you do with your week? Just find ways of phrasing things that give people an open option so that if they don't want to tell you about their personal life and children and marriage and stuff, it gives them a way out to talk about their hobbies. Do you ever have a respite from the river of loss?
That's poetic.
Deep, yeah. Well, I think in some ways we have felt like we've had a lot of loss. And I think when you say that, people might imagine you've lost, like, you know, 10 family members or something. But I have written about this on the blog and given a bit of our history with loss. And I think because we've lost, you know, our first loss was huge financially, and then we've lost grandparents and pets and jobs and health and not having a family, houses. There's been a long list of stuff which I don't think we recognise the amount of impact in 10 years that really had. So there has been a lot of loss, and I don't feel like we've had a lot of respite from it yet.
Yeah, not as much as we would like.
No. I don't think we've fully come to terms with it all yet.
No, I agree with that. I don't know when we'll come to terms with it. I don't think we're avoiding it. I don't think we've shut it away. I think we welcome exploring it, which is part of why we're doing this podcast series, is just to try and shine a light on the many different things that you can grieve, rather than just being big, obvious stuff. But getting respite from it, I don't think we've had anywhere near as much respite as we'd like. But we don't know why, and we don't know how to get that respite.
Mm.
We were talking the other week about something. There was quite an emotional conversation, and I was sort of picturing a stream becomes a river when there's more and more that feeds into it. And if you think of that stream, just to be really deep and poetic, if you think of that stream being sort of your soul, what brings your soul to life and to full-bodied life, things like children, pets, careers, promotions, pay rises, family relationships, love,
cake,
then all of that, the more of that that feeds into your soul, the more you sort of come to life. And when you remove something like children, that's a fairly major, you know, tributary that feeds into that river. And so you find, you know, well, here we are sort of 20 years down the line of being together, and our stream is still more of a stream than I'd like it to have been. I was, you know, the potential that I thought we had and still have would be, you know, quite a mighty river, that we'd have an impact on this world in quite a mighty way. And it still feels 20 years down the line like our stream is still a bit of a stream and not a mighty river. Does that make sense?
It does. And yet the question talks about a river of loss. So I feel like in some ways what's been inputting has been a lot of loss that's come in.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a bit of like a stream of blessings and a river of loss.
Yeah, there you go. Great, definitely. Yeah, I agree with that.
So how has accommodating loss prepared you for future grief? No children's weddings, no grandchildren, etc. I think it has helped us a lot, but I think there'll always be a sadness that just pings off every time a new thing happens. So the first grandchild amongst our friends is going to be hard. There'll be like milestones that I think will be difficult, but accommodating this now has prepared us a lot for the future.
I agree with that, certainly. I think the main thing, as we've already mentioned is just being prepared to recognize where there's loss, recognize that there might be something to grieve, and just allowing yourself time to do that, allowing yourself the opportunity to process and to talk about and to recognize that there's a sadness there, and we're just going to, you know, we're going to bring that into the forefront for a little while. That might be 10 minutes, it might be a couple of days, it might be a couple of weeks, but it's really important to recognize and to sit with it rather than to dismiss it or just think that shouldn't still be there.
So what has been the hardest point on your journey?
Crumbs. I don't know how to answer that question.
No, I wouldn't say there's one point. I think people would expect you to say, maybe, when we found out we'd never have a family, but you don't ever really find that out definitively in one point.
For me, it's not really one point. It's probably a season of just feeling like you're in the wilderness and just spending so long. And for us, what was probably several years and maybe still partly in the wilderness. And so it's a long point, but on our journey, you know, I do look back and remember strongly feeling excitement for the potential that we have as a couple when we got married, to think we've got the rest of our lives. You know, this is the coming together of two very ambitious, very exciting, adventurous characters. And I don't feel like we have reached that potential. And that's a sadness, but it's not a point on the journey. But we have spent, and maybe still are, not yet out of, several years feeling like we're in a wilderness. And that's been really tough, I think, because it's felt just cloudy and going around in circles and spending so long answering questions with the three words, I don't know. And that's really difficult when you like to have, you know, when you're a completer finisher, or you like to have successes to celebrate and markers to celebrate and achievements. And when you spend so long just saying, I don't know, that's really hard. So that's a very long point.
I think the period of time looking back that was hardest for me was probably when things shifted with our friends when they had children, and I didn't see that coming in the same way that I thought. That it looked different from what I thought it would look like. That was hard. And the other point was when I had put these expectations in, I think, that if we didn't have children, then let's have holidays. Let's have careers that we really enjoy. Let's take risks on that. Let's, you know, have a big house. Let's have, you know, we had our dog at the time, and, you know, let's do fun things and go out for the day. And, you know, all these things I thought would replace children, because people kind of give you that impression that you're not going to be, you're going to be more free, you're going to have more money, blah, blah. And that wasn't our experience, because my job didn't really go well. When it did, it wasn't paid brilliantly. My health went downhill, so I didn't feel physically good, and mentally it was tricky as well. So that wasn't really our experience. We had less money. We didn't have the holidays that we were anticipating. We still had holidays because we made them a priority, but not what we thought. We didn't have the income we thought. So I think things like that were really difficult, and I thought it was going to be different. I thought we were going to have another life, and I could sit there and think, well, at least we've got all this stuff, and we didn't have that. And when you realise that, and then your friends' lives change as well, and all that friendship goes away, then that's really difficult. So if anything, what have you gained through this loss? I've definitely gained a depth of character and perseverance on a level I would not have had if I'd have had either a very successful career or a family. I've had to dig deep and find purpose and meaning in just plodding onwards, which sounds really, plodding sounds a bit bad, but actually sometimes just the fact you're moving forwards is enough, even if you're plodding. And I've found that on a level I definitely wouldn't have had otherwise.
And for me, an awareness of grief, I think, in myself and in others as well, and a joy to be able to support others in that. I think to recognise when others are grieving the loss of something or someone or the end of a chapter, and being able to empathise with them and support them through that, I think that's something I've definitely developed in. And for myself, just, you know, as a bloke, as a guy, just being able to recognise the power of grief and the necessity of grief to get back to the life that you sort of want or thought that you deserved until you've grieved something. you're going to be held back. So, yeah, for me, just that awareness of the importance of grieving has been a really good thing.
Mm. And I think, you know, hope, I think we're strong advocates for hope. I always like to believe there's hope on the horizon. I don't always feel it, and I have my moments, but on the whole, I always want to believe that there's hope in any situation. I don't like the idea of anyone facing any kind of loss and losing all concept of hope. That just, I find that so sad, because it is out there. And even if you have to go and find, you have to go and find it. I don't think it comes to you. You've got to go and find it. But I think it's really important that people know that there's hope out there.
I'm not in the same place as you with that.
No.
I think you have more hope in this than I do. I think I'm a hopeful person generally, and I can be hopeful for others, but I often feel like I'm lacking hope for myself.
Did you ever ask why?
No. No, I've not ever asked why.
No, I don't think I have either. I've asked why in almost a comical, everything goes wrong for a while and I'm like, oh, and then I do that Joey, like, why? But I don't think I seriously was asking why.
I think going back to the cause, or part of the cause of our story being around my infertility, and that being because of a medical procedure that I had when I was aged about 5 or 6 years old, and now they do that same procedure on children much younger, so boys who are much younger, because of the implications, the scarring that can happen if they're too old. I've had somebody say, you know, why don't you sue the NHS, or why don't you take action? Which to me, you know, that's the sort of person that would be asking why. But that never entered my mind. Like, why would I retrospectively go back and take some sort of consider some sort of legal action because I've been left like this? It's sort of that compensation culture.
Mm.
So I don't ever feel like I need compensation, or, you know, why not? Why not me? So I've never asked why.
Yeah, I see a lot of women on groups of people who can't have children as well, who will very much question, why me? Why am I being punished? Why can't I be a mum? Why am I doomed to be alone? And that's never crossed my mind. I see it as a broken bit of biology. I don't see it as a personal slur on us. I don't see it as a personal slur on me that I had a hysterectomy. I don't feel any less about myself because I can't do things that most women would. No, that's just never been in my thought process at all. I think it's sad when people go down that route, really, to make themselves think that they're being punished or there's something wrong with them because of it, because it's not. It's just something that happens, and everyone has crap things that happen to them.
And we're really blessed in our marriage. I've said it before, I'll say it again many times, no doubt, but that you've never made me feel like less of a man. You've never made me feel responsible or to blame for any of this, ever since literally day one of finding out that could well be infertile and let's go have some tests. So I've never had cause to feel shame or pain because of anything you've said or done, that you've only ever been totally supporting, and that's made such a difference.
We're a team. You're broken, I'm broken.
Hey!
And the last question, what is your Herman?
Yes, we get to answer this question.
We do! And I bet you didn't think about it to prepare it either, did you?
No.
No, me neither.
Should have done.
We should have come up with something really wise and deep at this point to set the standard for Hermans.
I'm going to start with a cliche.
Well, that's not the best place to start, but
no,
go on.
No, but it is so important, which is you're not alone, to always know that you're not alone. That there's things like this podcast, there are other things, whatever situation you're going through, there will be others that have gone through it as well. And there's so much experience, so much value in shared experience that's really important to be able to help process and just to reassure you and encourage you on your journey. So I think just that message of not being alone is so important.
My Herman would be, there is life after loss. Just don't see the loss as the end of your journey. Don't see it as consuming your whole life. You can get past it. There is hope. You have loss, and it's awful. It's, you know, it's gut-wrenchingly horrible. And I would say find people on the other side of it. Find people who have been through what you've been through and have survived it and are out the other side, because you just get so much hope and light shed on what it looks like to speak to people like that. There's more beyond this. It's not the end. So there you have it. one episode, two parts, and our long ongoing journey with childlessness.
You can read more about this by visiting thesilenty.com/ourstory or find us on social media at The Silent Why Pod.
If you've got any other questions, feel free to DM or contact us. We love to hear from people and chat about our story.
We've also got a blog based around loss and grief, which is released every week.
Today, we're ending with some words from Rachel Marie Martin, author of Finding Joy and The Brave Art of Motherhood. Sometimes, you have to let go of the picture of what you thought life would be like and learn to find joy in the story you are actually living.